welcome to the latest episode of the People Will Talk podcast. Joining me, as always, is Maria. How are you?
Hello, very well.
That's great to hear. And our special guest, photographer Catalina Arangaren. How are you?
Hello, how are you? Thank you for having me.
It's a real joy having you here with us today. You have a big multinational background. You're in the arts through photography. We want to get into that as well. So much interesting stuff, so many interesting things to talk about. But we always start in the same place with our guests. This golden question: why did you move to Madrid? What brought you to the Spanish capital?
And how long is this podcast? How much time do we actually have?
As much time as you need.
You guys can edit me down if needed. I'm Colombian born, Venezuelan raised, and spent the last 30 years in the United States. I met my husband there, my now husband, and I told him at some point, we're going to leave the States. I never planned to stay in the States for very long. And after 30 years, it seemed like enough was enough. We have three boys. So there were three major factors that made us want to leave the States, which was violence in the schools, health insurance, the cost of health insurance and the problems if you don't have health insurance. And then also the cost of higher education in the United States. And so we really started figuring out, okay, where would we go? We've talked about coming to Madrid for years, easily 10 years. But when it came down to it, we're like, okay, we really have to sit down and analyze why or where we're going to go. So I've lived in France and I've lived in Holland and I loved living there, but we didn't think that those were going to be great places with the boys. The UK, we felt, my sister lives there, we felt like it was kind of jumping out of one frying pan into the other. And South America, unfortunately, just where Peter and I are both artists, it's not a place where we thought we could succeed. So, you know, we thought, okay, well, Spain is where, you know, we speak the language, you know, somewhat it's the boys' culture. So let's think of Spain. And then we started thinking, okay, Barcelona versus Madrid. And Madrid just has this flavor to it that is really incomparable to anywhere in the world. No, the metro line is clean, is spotless, and never smells like urine. People are polite on the train, which, you know, in a lot of train systems around the world, you don't see that. The safety, the security, people walking around in the middle of the night. As a woman walking around at 2 o'clock in the morning, I've never felt uncomfortable or in fear. You see people out and about all the time, kids, old people, young people, everybody. And so just the culture, the life of it, the love of life of Madrid, I think, is what we really gravitated towards and are very, very, very happy to be here with.
That's really nice to hear. Obviously, you have such an international background. You've lived in many different places, and it seems that you were surrounded. I believe you studied as well in an international school. So you've always been surrounded by people from different backgrounds. So is it something that you intentionally seek out now as well to make friends with a wide variety of people?
I don't think it's intentional. And you know what? I've been an expat since I was 5 years old, but it wasn't until now that I'm 50 that I've realized that I've been an expat my whole life. There is something that you kind of just talk a lot about with other expats, and it's that the expat life is something that is very hard to understand for a lot of people. So when you have lived that, when just answering where are you from is not a one word answer, you kind of fall into a group with all of these people who have lived in other places, who have married people from other places, whose kids are third culture kids, who they themselves are third culture kids. I mean, it's I think when you're in that world, you just automatically fall into step with the people that are like that around you. Not to say that I don't want to meet people who are purely Spanish, and I do, and I love it here. I mean, being in a cab in Madrid is one of the most fantastic experiences. Every single cab driver, the majority at least, are Spanish, and they have been cab drivers for a very long time. And you come out of that cab knowing something about Madrid or Spain that you'd never read about in any travel book. We still enjoy meeting the locals and sharing and participating with the locals. But really, as an expat, when you have that difference of you don't really know where you are from or where you belong, you kind of look for those people to fill your tribe.
It's a very interesting reflection on finding people of a similar background. Know these people who are in between locations. Which I think also extends to language, because I've seen on your website that you mentioned at home you would have spoken Spanish to your parents and English to your sister. So you're obviously, you know, bilingual, fully fluent in both languages. Just a curious question. Do you ever find yourself switching between these two languages without realizing it because you're just so comfortable in both of them?
So Spanglish is my favorite language. I feel incredibly at home with Spanglish. And it's fine. And so like you said, I went to an international school in Caracas. And so all of my friends from school, we are the same. We speak Spanish and English in the same capacity. I think it's hard actually for us to say which is our main tongue, because even though Spanish is my maternal tongue, English is what I went to school with and what I worked with my entire life. So they're both equally there. We had a board meeting for my father's company recently. And again, everyone on the board is also fully bilingual. And being here for a couple of years, and even being in the States, because I didn't have that Spanglish that was so... when I meet up with my school friends, I get. So anyway, so I'm at this board meeting and we're all Spanglishing away for 3 days. And and it makes me so happy. And I know that any language purist out there is just horrified that I'm saying this, but it just makes me feel very at home, because it is exactly the way I grew up. So after these 3 days of board meetings and all of this Spanglishness, I had to thank everybody. I mean, then we were, you know, people from 87 down to, I don't know, 27. And it was just such a way to like make a bond between all of these generations with our Spanglishness. So it is really incredible to have Spanglish.
So, well, Catalina, you'll be pleased to know we don't care much about purists in this podcast. So you're right. And we do agree that, you know, it's such an interesting mixture. And I think we practice ourselves a version of that as well. But we've talked a bit about your personal background, but we would also be very interested in your professional background. So obviously arts, photography. You studied in Chicago and you studied in Paris, didn't you? So how did those experiences compare? And can you tell us a little bit about how you started to be interested in photography?
Sure. So I've always been into the arts. I've been an artist my entire life. Even when I was a little kid, I've always been... So art class was my favorite art class. In fact, I'm still in touch with my art teacher from high school and from elementary school. So I think for many years, I thought I was going to be an architect. I applied to a couple schools. I went to Chicago once and fell in love with the city because of its architecture, and applied to the School of the Art Institute to go to school there. But then once I got to school there, I kind of took classes in a bunch of things as you do in the States the first year. And I just fell in love with photography. I love being in dark room, which I haven't done for many, many years, but it is such an incredible experience. It's magic. You sit there and with complete darkness, you have to put the roll of film into the can and develop it. And all of a sudden there's image on there. And then once that's done, then you can put light on a white piece of paper and then put the piece of paper in liquid. And all of a sudden this amazing magical transformation happens on the paper and you have an image. So I think I just fell in love with it. It really is something that I've always had. I always kind of see the photograph as I'm taking it. If you look through my images, you are going to find that most things are not, they're not all very ornate or complicated. I shoot what I see immediately. And I've always had that. So then I translate that also into my design. So I also do graphic design and jewelry design and home design. So yeah, so it's been something that images have always just been something that I'm really, really interested in, and I love doing it. So it's just, you know, as I walk down the street, I'll see something that catches my eye and immediately try to capture it. I don't try to sit, you know, in a location and wait for people to walk by, or I don't put in a studio a complicated series of things that are going to then be a tableau. I just try to catch that very specific little moment. And that's, you know, I think I've done that forever. So photography just was a natural, realization of that.
I really like how you describe the being in a dark room as this magical space. And myself and Maria, we've been to many photographic exhibitions in the last few years about Leica cameras, the early days of photography. And there was one where I think it was in the 60s or 70s, American photographer just talking about using film and just snapping and not knowing what they had until they developed the pictures later, which of course is a world away from our digital photography. Nowadays, you know, but I think I've seen your pictures and myself and Maria as well, and we both really love them. They're so interesting, and I will put a link to your website in the description of the podcast. But you mentioned on your website that I guess in essence your work is inspired by lights, this interplay between the subconscious and the conscious, which sounds really intriguing and wonderful. So since you are the artist, could you maybe tell us more about those influences and those impulses?
Yeah, well, a lot of it has to do with what we were talking about before, you know, who you are, who you think you are, what your reality is, right? I mean, our experiences are so much based on where we come from. So when I shoot, a lot of times I expect that I'm going to have a very different perspective of what I see in the final product versus what you're going to see in the final product. There's, for example, a photograph of fireworks that I have that I shot a very long time ago, but it's still one of my favorite pieces. And everybody has such a very different reaction to that. And I think it all comes from where you come from. So for the 4th of July in the United States is like this massive major holiday, lots of fireworks. It's, you know, even if you're in a small town, it's all about this grandiose event. But it just so happens that it was a girlfriend's birthday, and we had a very lazy 4th of July by the river. And you know, there was two fireworks, and I had the chance to photograph one, or the remnants of one. And so when you tell an American about, you know, that this is the 4th of July, most of them can't really see that as the representation of the 4th of July, because they're expecting something much more grandiose. In fact, for me, the fact that we had like this very lazy, wonderful day at the beach made that 4th of July aspect of it even more beautiful. So yeah, so it all depends on where you're coming from, how you perceive something, how you see the world, and then, you know, ultimately the still images that I present.
Well, I think that's a very interesting answer, because in the end, art is all about perception as well. And obviously we all have different interpretations of it, and it means different things to us. But some of your work is also divided into themes. So you have blue, for example, you have Megalopolis. So do you decide on these collections beforehand, or, you know, do you find that certain images have something in common and then you decide, well, these ones should be grouped together? How does it work for you?
Yeah, when I did the website, because, you know, artists didn't have websites 10 years ago. And then all of a sudden we had to all start getting modern and doing all of these things. I started looking through my images and realized that I do, I pride myself in not being a certain type of photographer. I'm not a street photographer. I'm not a studio photographer. I'm not a fashion photographer. I like photographing everything. But it is true that your eye ends up selecting things that are similar. The color blue, without any intention, is incredibly important in my work. I can present an entire collection of blue pieces that aren't boring. They're just all blue. I mean, it wouldn't be a boring show, but it would definitely be monochromatic. So I just started realizing as I was creating the website that I do have a way of separating sometimes the images that I shoot that fit into categories which aren't the traditional categories that photographers or even artists may claim. But I think that for me, they just seem to all fit in very clearly into little bundles.
So, well, I mean, that makes perfect sense. If we bring it back to Madrid and your experience in Madrid, you've told us a little bit about, you know, like your influences in how it's so broad. So there are so many things that, you know, catch your eye and you transform them into this art. So speaking specifically of Madrid, what do you think of the visual art scene? What are your impressions of it so far?
So I am actually in awe of the amount of art that exists in Madrid. At my boys' school, they asked me to do a chat as an artist. And one of the things that I was telling the kids, especially because I had some little ones that I was talking to, is that I'm always in awe of how much public art there is. And people don't even realize, but the facades of buildings, in the train station, sculptures, it's really awe-inspiring, the amount of public art that there is in the city. But on top of that, then you add not only that you have incredible museums, the Thyssen, the Reina Sofia, the Prado, but then also there are art shows, so many art shows. There's a season for them, yes. Unfortunately, I wish they were more spread out, because I don't think you can do all of them at once. It's too much. But also the amount of galleries that exist. So Arco has a couple of art walks, and I signed up for a few of them the last time around. And I was surprised of the not only the quality, but the quantity of galleries, and then galleries that you never see, because you wouldn't know they were there. They're on the second floor of buildings, they're inside through, you know, in the courtyards. So unless you know that they exist, I don't know how you find them. And then to add to that, what I thought was very interesting in this particular art walk was that so much of it was conceptual art, which I think conceptual art is a hard sell for a person's home. I mean, you can't I don't know. I don't think that you would want to buy a lot of the conceptual art for your home because it's not the place for it. Usually for a conceptual piece, you need a lot of space. You need a lot of white walls or, you know, something that gives you that kind. So I don't know who buys it and I don't know how the money is made, but I love going to see it. And there's definitely a lot of spaces. When it comes to opportunities, I think that it's been harder to figure that out. You know, you're starting already at kind of advanced age, moving here to start art from scratch. So it's been hard to figure out how to get into stuff. So I have participated in a couple of shows. I joined a couple of arts organizations, but I'd like to do more and I'm working on figuring that out.
And just before we finish up, you know, you mentioned that, I guess, the challenges maybe of starting when you move to a new city. Also, as you mentioned, there's lots of exhibitions. So there's lots of artists out there. And whenever we have someone on the podcast who has a lot of expertise and passion for their subject matter, like you do, we always like to ask them what advice they would give to budding photographers, people who have an interest in maybe starting down this career path as a hobby or a job or a passion project, whatever it would be. You know, what would you say to them to help them navigate this type of journey?
So I think you have to define what success is for you. Obviously we all need to make a living and be able to survive. And art is a very hard way of doing that, especially at the beginning and for others forever. So I know that I recently, well, not so recently, during the pandemic, did an interview with a Chinese magazine who they asked me the same thing. And I think you have to define success. So for me, success is continuing to create. During the pandemic, I had a really hard time finding stuff to shoot because, like I told you, I don't shoot. I just point and shoot. I don't find other places to. They don't sit there and wait or create images. Like images just come to me. So that was really, really hard. And I think during the pandemic, I realized that my success is being able to create. As time goes on. So I would say for budding artists, fall in love with your work, continue to create. Not every piece is going to be a masterpiece, but in creating, you're going to have the chance to do what you love and what your calling is. And that is the sign of success, not how much money you have in the bank account. You might have to do another job in order to be able to create. That's not, you know, we can't take that apart away from that, but realize that your creation is what's important. You being an artist and being able to release that talent.
Oh, don't worry. We myself and Maria know very well about having second jobs to support our creative endeavors. So hopefully the future, the next generations can live off the fruits of their artistic labors. But for the moment, Catalina, an absolute pleasure listening to you, having you on the podcast. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.